Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, August 15th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our brand new website, absolutely, totally redesigned, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Need an incubator? Think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey. Technology you can trust.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thought we had some dead air there. I had told somebody in the chat room to refresh, but actually it was a dead head here on my end because I didn't push the unmute button. So, hey, I'm human, and I'm not about to hide my imperfectalities, if you will. So no worries there, but we should be broadcasting live. No problems whatsoever. But we've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCrae, PhD. She's going to be joining us talking about all about how light affects chickens and their bird brain. So very great show, great topic. Get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. Get ready to take some notes from the resident experts we have here on the radio show. In fact, we've had great guests all week long. Monday, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Tuesday, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Wednesday, brand spanking new show, Ask All About Quail with the Quail Lady. And then today, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCrae. So we appreciate you tuning in today. And as always, a real quick shout out to all the homeschoolers that are listening to the show live. Thank you so much for incorporating the show into your daily curriculum. We appreciate that. All the over-the-road truck drivers, all of the stores nationwide that stream this radio show live to their listeners, to their customers, thank you so much for doing so. Hope business is doing well. All of those that are able to get into the chat room, and those of you who are listening live but can't get into the chat room because of your browser or cause some blog talk radio issues, we know you're out there, though, because we hear from you. And last but not least, all of the thousands and thousands of listeners that listen to the archive on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and BlogTalkRadio.com, thank you for being a fan and listener. So, yeah, we have a great show lined up for you today. There's Christmas Chick popping her head into the chat room. It's so glad to see you, Christmas Chick, and a longtime regular listener. And maybe we'll be able to get down to Florida and visit with you on our next book tour. How cool is that? But, yep, gotta love Christmas Chick and Christmas Florida. Chinese food for lunch and found out that she has a flat tire on her truck. Okay, you pick up some cool beans for actually having a truck But you lose some cool beans for going to eat some Chinese food high in MSG and sodium and all that kind of stuff. So you're back to being cool. I guess they cancel themselves out between you own a truck, but you're going to get Chinese. No worries at all. So your son's putting on the spare, and that's cool. Nice that your son will do that for you. And but Chinese, really? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Last week, me and Jen went and had some Chinese food, so no worries there. There's like one local restaurant where we're staying that's halfway decent, so pretty good deal as well. So we stopped and got a little Chinese food last week. So over almost 1,000 episodes, and 5 years of broadcasting. There's one thing. You can say I've got a big head. You can say I'm out of this world. You can say whatever you want to be about me, but you can never say that I'm a hypocrite. I practice what I preach. I would challenge anybody as much or more than anybody else on the planet. You cannot call me a hypocrite. I'll get on to you about drinking high fructose corn syrup, but I'll let you know when I drink a Sprite on occasion, and I'm my worst advocate of that. So one thing you'll never in the history of my life be able to call me is a hypocrite. So got to love that. We got a great show again lined up for you today. Poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, talking about how light really affects chickens and their bird brain. So very good topic today. We hope you'll get in and get that Chicken Whisperer notebook out and get ready to take some notes. Got to love that. And in fact, we'll go ahead and head over here to the we can go ahead, and if we can have Dr. McRae go ahead and call in. She is in the chat room. Go ahead and give us a call, Dr. McRae, and we'll get you live on the air, and we'll get started. A little bit shorter show today, I've been informed, which is perfectly fine, so we can get on with our life, L-I-F-E, exactly. Oh, I just want to tell everybody that it has been confirmed. Of course, I posted this a little while ago on our Facebook page that I have been contracted for another year as the national spokesperson for the United States Department of Agriculture's Biosecurity for Birds program. Had a nice lengthy conversation yesterday with the PR firm that handles that, and very excited to be their national spokesperson again for another year through 2014. We'll be doing webinars and a Twitter chat and all kinds of great things, spreading the chicken love all across the country. So very excited to be signed on. This will be my fourth year with the USDA, so I'm very proud of that, and I'm glad they are pleased with what we're doing. Also had a chat with Tractor Supply. And I'm still not sure. I'm still trying to feel out where our next two book tour are going to be with Tractor Supply. I had suggested maybe doing a Florida in the late September, and then really blowing it out of the water in Tennessee for a big Tennessee tour that's in Tractor Supply's backyard for the first week in November. They came back, and they said they weren't sure about the Florida one yet because 6 weeks is still kind of soon, even though we can do that. But they were very interested in the first week of November doing a huge Tennessee tour with great media, great crowds, and really pumping a lot of PR into that since it is in their backyard. So I sent them back some emails, and we're still corresponding on what it's going to be. I still have two book tours with TSC I need to do according to my contract before the end of the year, and I'd like to get those done. But it wouldn't hurt my feelings one bit if they came back and said, well, you can make that other tour up next year because we're going to sign you on for another year. Nope, that wouldn't hurt my feelings one bit. I would welcome that email as well. So we'll just see what happens regarding that, and I will let you guys know where we're going to be and times, dates, and the whole nine yards. So no worries there. Christmas Chick says she's going to be trying to listen on her phone, and she will be back soon. All righty. Well, if you're heading out, go ahead and pick me up a Mongolian beef. Light on the soy sauce, please. No MSG, extra MSG added, if you'll request that. And then some crab ragoons, I think it's called. Isn't that a little, those deep-fried little pockets with the cream cheese and crab inside? Isn't that right? DePeasley in the chat room, she wants an egg roll for her. And I'll take, a small order of Mongolian beef or sweet and sour pork. Either one, your call. And then this is a chicken show. Maybe I should go with the almond chicken. Gotta love it. Just bring back, go ahead and get the family pack while you're there, Christmas Chick. You know, get the lunch for 20. And it comes with 10 different entrees and 4 different appetizers and 6 different soups. And go ahead and just bring it back, and we'll all enjoy it there in the chat room while we learn about chickens and how light affects them. And somebody wants the poo-poo platter. And where'd they come up with that name? So the large poo-poo platter. There you go. I guess that's a whole. So bring it back, Christmas Chick, and we'll all enjoy the Chinese food for lunch there in the chat room. All right, let's get over here to the switchboard, and there we go. Let's give Dr. McCray a big chicken whisper. Welcome. Hey, Doc. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Andy. How are ya?
I'm doing great. I've got breaking news. Did you know that Morans cannot get salmonella because they have thick-shelled eggs?
No, I did not know that.
Okay, folks, unless you didn't know, we've had some conversations off the air about that and not poking fun at anybody, but this is, it kind of goes to more bad information out there on blogs and forums about Morans can't get salmonella because they have thick-shelled eggs or something like that. So I was consulting with Dr. McCray last week about that, and we had some good laughs about that. But so I wanted to get that on you. And in fact, you sound like you were having a busy day that day and really appreciated the giggle and the laugh on that particular day. So, but you did set the record straight, and we appreciate that. But today, talking about chickens and how light affects them and their bird brain. And would that have anything to do with the circadian clock?
Yes, it does. Exactly. Ooh. Circadian rhythm. Yeah. But I wanted to say before I get started, congratulations on working again with the Backyard Biosecurity Program. That's really a very good program that passes on a lot of good information to a variety of new chicken owners. I know a lot of, you know, longtime chicken owners, they're like, oh, yeah, I've heard that 1,000 times. But it's not so much hearing it, it's doing it. So if you're one of those people out there who, you know, sees the Backyard for Biosecurity for Backyard Birds program and you know you should be making some changes, well, maybe this fall is your opportunity to make some small changes so that you don't have the problems that can just be devastating for your birds.
One of my goals for 2014, Doc, is going to be either create a packet or just hopefully not have to reinvent the wheel, use materials they already have, and they have some great materials out there, and try to pinpoint and search and find out, I know about most of them, about the chicken coop tours that have become very popular around the country, and concentrate on finding who's in charge of those and getting them a box of information to either hand out at every coop about this, or at least to get to the people who are on the tour with their coops, showing the coops about how important biosecurity is. And so that's one of my goals for 2014. Everybody seems to love these chicken coop tours, but there are risks involved there. And so that's one of my goals in 2014 is to get the information into the coop owners' hands, into the coordinators' hands of these coop tours, and really let them, you know, you're not going to make, I guess, anybody do anything, but at least they have the information, they can do with it what they please, but encourage them to practice the biosecurity while they're on these these very popular chicken coop tours across the country.
Yeah, because nobody wants to be responsible, you know, for anybody else's problems. That's never anybody's intention.
Nope.
But, you know, intentions, well, sometimes that just comes down to action. You know, putting together a foot bath is really quick once you get everything purchased. But maintaining it may not be something you want to do, but it's something you need to do if you're going to have a hoop tour.
Exactly.
So just keeping those little details in mind. Well, today I was going to talk to you a little bit about circadian rhythms and photoperiod light for birds, because it finds its way into our conversations a few times in the course of a year, doesn't it, Andy? Maybe it's a question from a listener, or maybe it's kind of segues its way in through another topic that I'm covering. But I thought that maybe I'd give it its own day today. So when it comes to light for chickens, a lot of us really don't understand how important it really is for chickens, and really for all birds. What happens is it's not only the eyes, but there's actually wavelengths of light that penetrate through into the brain. So they go through the comb, the skin, the feathers, the bone, into the brain to where there are extra retinal receptors. So extra retinal means outside of the eye. So there are light receptors in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've mentioned this in the past, but there is, you know, occasionally a bird that ends up being blind. And they still lay eggs. So the light isn't actually reaching them through their eyes, it's reaching them through their brain. So it's quite the process. All birds have the ability to lay based upon light.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happens is the light goes into the eye or indirectly, you know, to the hypothalamus. That's a part of the brain that's actually kind of towards the bottom of the brain. So it's the light wavelengths are actually penetrating deep into the brain, towards the bottom.
Wow.
So when it reaches the hypothalamus, what does it do? It stimulates the hypothalamus to increase the production of a particular hormone. It's called gonadotropin releasing hormone, or GnRH. So what does gonadotropin releasing hormone do? Well, it goes through the brain and the circulatory system to another gland. So it's just the messenger. The gland it goes to is the anterior pituitary gland. And that gland releases two hormones that are of interest to us. Luteinizing hormone, or LH, and follicle stimulating hormone, or FSH. And those travel through the blood, the circulatory system of the bird, until it reaches the ovary. So here's where those two hormones are circulating through the majority of the bird, because the pituitary gland's up in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it reaches the ovary. What do those two hormones do when it reaches the ovary? Well, they tell the ovary, okay, it's time to develop. It's time for you to mature. And it gets the ovary to release estradiol. And for a female bird, the oviduct will mature and grow. And that's what gives us, you know, all the parts of the egg is the oviduct. When the yolk is released into the oviduct, an egg is formed, hopefully. And it also, you know, the follicle stimulating hormone and the luteinizing hormone, they tell the follicles in the ovary to start growing. Now, what's a follicle? Well, that's basically a very small, tiny, tiny little egg yolk. And as they start to grow, eventually they get more and more yellow added to them, and they start to look more and more like an egg yolk until the one that's most ready to be released and see the oviduct goes ahead and is released, and an egg is formed around it into the oviduct. So all this because of light reaching the eye or the brain. And, you know, we buy chicks, we put them under brooder lamps, which is perfectly fine. Or we put them outside and, you know, maybe it's hot enough that you don't have to put a brooder lamp. But a lot of us rely upon Mother Nature to supply the power bill, okay? But for those out there of your listeners, Andy, who may be wanting to take their hobby to the next step and turn it into an enterprise, or maybe they're trying to create a school science fair project, or maybe maybe they're trying to get an older hen to lay because they haven't figured out why she stopped laying in the winter. This is the talk today for you, you listeners out there. So light has two functions, okay? Intensity and wavelength. And, you know, there's all kinds of bulbs you can buy out there, different types of bulbs. Have you ever just gone into Lowe's or Home Depot and just looked at the light bulb aisle? Your head could spin, I tell you. There's a lot of choices out there. But if you're going to put a light up in your chicken coop so that you supply extra light to your birds, let's talk about the kinds of lights. So wavelength. They can perceive all the light that we see, but they can also perceive a little tiny amount of ultraviolet light. So does that mean that your ultraviolet bug killer outside of your house is going to influence egg production? Probably not, because they put them into chicken houses, big commercial chicken houses, and right. it doesn't impact any of the reproduction. So, you know, don't worry about putting one of those UV bug zappers out there. Your chickens may want to eat what falls down from the bug zapper, but it's not going to affect, you know, the light from it's not going to affect your birds. When you think about the two main types of commercial egg-laying chickens, there's two broad groups. The commercial laying hens that lay eggs that we buy at the grocery store, and then broiler breeders, the birds that lay the eggs that go to the hatchery, and when they hatch out, those are the meat chickens that you buy at the grocery store. Now, light tends to affect the broiler breeders more so than the laying hens. So there's a little bit more wiggle room with regard to those birds that have a tendency towards egg laying. But then again, a lot of your listeners, Andy, have dual-purpose birds, correct?
That is correct.
And, you know, if somebody wants to sponsor research to see light's effectiveness on some of those heritage breeds, then give me a call. So we're going to talk about some terms right now. We're going to do terminology definitions. Photosensitive period. That's basically the period of time between 11 and 16 hours after dawn in a 24-hour day. So that's going to be about, you know, 11 o'clock to, 4 or 5, which is towards the end of the day for these chickens. And that's a long day. It's called a long day is one where the light is actually reaching the bird between that critical photosensitive period, 11 to 16 hours after dawn. If you don't have light during that critical photosensitive phase or period, then it's called a short day because it's not a photostimulatory day. And Andy, think about it. What time of year do you not have light, natural day lengths, at about 4, 5?
Sure, in the afternoon. It's going to be really the deep winter.
Yep. And so the winter season in the temperate zones, that's when you tend to have, you know, birds that go out of lay. Maybe not in their first year, but most likely in their next year. So if you are turning this into a business, Andy, you need those birds to be constantly supplying your buyers with product. So,
or you may be one of those backyard folks that say, by golly, if I'm having to buy food every month, I'm going to get me some eggs every month.
And these chickens... chickens are capable of laying for you consistently through winter. And the reason why we know this, historically speaking, you never got eggs in the winter because birds stopped laying eggs in the winter. The days were shorter. Well, we didn't know it was because of day length, but there was a lady by the name of Mrs. Hermy Shoup, S-H-O-U-P. She lived in Washington State, and she worked a regular job. So that meant if she had to take care of a bird, she had to do it after the work day was done. What she would do, she'd go out to the chicken house in fall and winter and take her little lantern with her and do what she needed to do to take care of the chickens in her regular routine. Well, her birds laid way farther into winter, fall and winter, than anybody else's eggs. So they figured out it was because she was carrying that lantern around, and that was the first kind of step towards research on light's effects on egg laying. So when you have a photoperiod, photosensitive phase, light in that phase switches on egg production. But to switch off egg production, that's called photorefractoriness. I know that's a big word. Go ahead, scrabble it if you want. It's a real word. So photorefractoriness refers to basically when light no longer has an effect on the bird's ability to lay. So, birds are going to stay photostimulated for a long period of time. And at the same time, they're slowly, gradually gaining more photorefractoriness to the point where light no longer has much effect. Now, chickens tend to be a little bit less photorefractory than, say, turkeys. Turkeys can become really quite quickly photorefractory. And so if you're raising turkeys for breeding them at all, oh boy, it's a little bit of a challenge. They tend to go broody. They tend to become photorefractory. And so you sometimes have to reset their light schedule by controlling their light, by putting them back on short days and seeing if that helps reset them successfully. So, as the birds become photostimulatory with longer days, they're also at the same time increasing in photorefractoriness. And so it could be that your birds lay really well for the first year, but then they become photorefractory, and then they also choose to molt at the same time. So sometimes that's just a good timing. So eventually photorefractoriness will cause a gradual decrease in your egg production in your hens. But if you shock the birds with really super stimulatory day lengths, like you're making the days longer than 17 hours, you're really going to have photorefractoriness show up at your door knocking real hard saying, "I'm here, let me in."
Comments in the chat room. One was that young lady in there says she normally lets her birds naturally rest in the winter. I've never added light in any of my coops, and mainly because we've always had so many chickens and a small family. Up until a couple of years ago, it was just me and Jen. So even when they slowed down, I had plenty of chickens, and we still got plenty of eggs for us too. But again, I completely get the fact that, hey, if I'm having to buy feed, I want as many chickens as I get, so I'm going to add a light in the coop or what have you. Mm-hmm. So I get that. Backing up a little bit, not to change the topic, we talked about it. She wanted to know if putting a bug zapper in the chicken run would be a good thing for the girls, maybe to get some extra insects, or is that maybe not a bad idea?
Well, remember, insects are intermediate hosts for internal parasites.
Gotcha.
So that's and they can carry diseases to your bird. So not really good to to have chickens running around eating insects unless you're going to consistently monitor the health of your birds and make sure that, you know, if you're going to choose this lifestyle, you're also going to make sure that they're healthy all the time and they haven't met the one bug that gave them the roundworm that's breeding its, you know, itself into oblivion in your bird's gut. So
right.
you have to balance. And like I said, there's only one over-the-counter wormer. And all that does is really put the roundworms to sleep. And because they take a nap, they don't always let go and then fall out in the feces. Some of them stay, and then you've got, you know, some that are just sitting there going, hey, there's more room for me. Let's keep breeding. So, yeah, it's a risk. It's a biosecurity risk. So let's talk a little bit about light intensity. So dimmer switches, okay? Some people, you know, the light bill for a chicken house, no. I mean, for your plain old chicken coop, the only light you want to pay for is when you're out there. Well, if this is a business, and Cooperative Extension, one of our goals is to help people, you know, make their lives easier and realize profits from their agricultural enterprises, what you may need to do is put a light out there and maybe have it on a timer. If you're not going to remember to go turn it on and off, put it on the timer. You can also put it on a dimmer. So commercial laying hens tend to be a little bit more tolerant of lower light intensity than those broiler breeders or those turkeys. Turkeys and broiler breeders need about 2 to 5 foot candles. Now, foot candle or lux or lumen is how you measure light intensity. So 2 to 5 foot candles would be the amount of light it would take you to read regular newsprint with your glasses on that's sitting about 2 to 5 feet from your face. But like I said, laying hens, they can tolerate much lower light. They can handle half a foot candle, which is equivalent to 5 lux.
Okay.
So if you take regular newsprint, put it 6 inches or half a foot from your face, and then dim the lights down until you can just barely read the newsprint, that's half a foot candle. And so if you buy a bulb or install electricity in your coop and you put a dimmer switch on there, you can buy a lower intensity light bulb.
Hey, a night light sounds like. A little night light.
Yeah. Well, some people, you know, they'll do dimmer switches, and some people put LEDs in, LED lights.
Yes.
But they dim over time, too. But I'm not saying that they need a Christmas tree at Christmas. I am saying that if you want to lay through Christmas and beyond, you might need a little bit more light in there. So what else does light do to the bird? Now, the pineal gland produces a hormone called melatonin. And periods of light will prevent melatonin from being produced by the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is towards the top of the brain, near the center. And when it's dark, your pineal gland tends to make melatonin. Well, what does melatonin do? It's an antioxidant that helps your cells stay healthy by, you know, getting rid of free radicals, and it also helps your immune system. So you need light and you need dark. And you need about, you know, an average of 8 hours of dark for people, for humans, and about the same for chickens in order for their bodies to really kind of recharge. That's why they tell you get a good night's sleep so that you don't get sick. And here we are. Yes, we're in summer, but eventually we're going to be talking about the flu and hand washing and, you know, get a good night's rest so your immune system can actually do the job that you're depending upon it to do, especially if you're not really good about hand washing and you get the flu every year. All right, let's talk about different kinds of bulbs that you can buy. You can do incandescent bulbs, and you can do fluorescent bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have a fairly average amount of light intensity. Like a 120-volt incandescent bulb, that has a like 1 foot candle per watt. And a warm white fluorescent bulb, that's got almost 3 foot candles per watt. Cool white fluorescents, that's
mm-hmm.
almost 2 foot candles per watt. So there's different kinds of bulbs you can buy out there. Yes, you can put fluorescent systems in, and I'll talk about the benefits of incandescent versus fluorescent in just a moment. But like I said, think about what kind of bulb you're going to put out there for your birds. And how much electricity are you willing to spend on them? You don't have to get a 100-watt bulb.
Uh-huh.
You can go to some of the specialty markets and see if they have some of those dimmable systems that you can install and get yourself maybe a 25-watt bulb.
Awesome.
All right, let's compare incandescent lamps and fluorescent lamps. And I'm not talking about going out there and putting an end table in your chicken house and putting a lamp on it. I'm talking about the actual bulbs themselves. They're called lamps. So incandescent bulbs are broad spectrum, but they display longer wavelengths in the yellow and red end of visible light. But they also give off a lot of infrared energy. And that comes to us in the form of heat. Ever touched a bulb that you didn't let cool down soon enough, Andy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's wasted energy. That's converting inefficiently electrical energy into visible light. And they're expensive to operate. The only advantage to having incandescent bulbs is that they're cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is they tend not to reduce their light output as they get older. They just go out. It's their last hurrah. Everybody's walked into the room, flip the switch, and you hear pop. You're like,
yep.
Oh, man. And you hope you find out when it's still light enough that you can
yep.
go find the other bulb and come back and put the new one in. Okay, fluorescent lamps. There's two different kinds of fluorescent lamps. A lot of people are used to the tubes, fluorescent tubes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The only time we really pay attention to them is when they're starting to fail, because then they flicker. And a lot of people find that annoying, like I do. But there's another kind. There's a compact type. They're meant to screw into light sockets, and what they basically look like are two tiny fluorescent tubes that come out of the base, and then they meet at the end. So it's a big U-shape, upside-down U-shape. The length of the tubes can be different depending on what you're buying, so you can vary it. They're less expensive, but they tend to come in two different tones, cool white or warm white. And the deluxe warm white tends to have the longer wavelengths, and the cool white tends to have shorter wavelengths. So depends on what you're buying and what you feel comfortable with. You can either install fluorescent lamps, the big long kind. But if you're going to put those in the chicken house, can I make a recommendation? Put a guard up over it. Because you're going to hit it eventually with a rake or a broom handle or maybe a chicken's going to fly into it and just shatter it. And then you're dealing with broken glass. But if you had a shatter guard over it, then you would avoid that problem altogether. So fluorescent lamps are less expensive, and they do have a longer life expectancy than the incandescent bulbs. Fluorescent, eventually you may see like a 10 or 15% reduction in lumens over the life of the lamp. And sometimes if it's cold out, the darn thing just has a hard time starting. They are affected by temperature. So those are some of the give and take of those types of lamps. Okay, is it time for a commercial, Andy?
Yeah, that'll be fine. We can take a break. I was just thinking that same thing, a little shorter show. Go ahead and get the commercial break in, and we'll come back and get some more information about how light affects our chickens, both layers and broilers. And so, folks, we've been talking to Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and professor, all about how light affects our backyard chickens, and there's going to be more to come after this short break from our sponsors. Stay with us. There's a lot more coming up after the break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today. for another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today is poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, talking all about how life affects our backyard chickens. Great information so far. Looking forward to some more. Turn it over to you, Doc.
Thank you.
Sure.
So most of us, when we're rearing our first chicks or even our next batch of chicks or maybe our last batch of chicks, I don't know, but a lot of us will get them in the springtime and expose the birds to natural daylight. So any chicks that hatch in spring or summer, that's called hatching birds in season. What those birds do is they grow up and reach sexual maturity as the days become shorter, which is advantageous to you, the small flock owner. That means you can control the light and how fast they mature. So if you see that your birds are still really light-bodied and if they start laying, they could have some problems with their oviduct. Maybe their bodies just need to mature a week or two longer. Well, you can pull back on the number of hours of light you give them by turning the lights off just a little bit sooner and then working them back up to the 11 to 16 hours of light so that their bodies don't, you know, really push the envelope. However, if you hatch chicks in the late fall and winter, that's called out of season, then those birds are going to reach sexual maturity as the days start to get longer. And you have to be really careful that the birds don't reach sexual maturity too soon. So, you know, what do we do in commercial industry? Because those birds are being hatched out all the time, right, Andy?
Correct.
So what they do is they have specially made houses so that they can control what light gets in or what lights the birds receive. They use something over the windows or the vents for the fans, because if you've ever been in a chicken house and the fan turns on, obviously light's going to come in through the fan as the blades are spinning. Well, you cover those entrances with something called a light trap. And what it is you've got a box with an opening that points towards the ground, and inside of it are baffles. It's all painted black. So the light can't get past three or four turns, and so you get true darkness inside of the house, and the only lights the bird receive are the lights that you control. You have either it on a computer, or you've got a schedule that you go out there and turn the lights on. So that is describing how commercial houses actually control that so that you can get birds that lay eggs all year round. All right. Just to kind of finish things up, as you increase day length, you need to think about your birds. Are they of suitable age, and what is their body weight? If the days are so long that, you know, your birds really need to kind of slow things down, you don't want them to suffer from trying to produce an egg before their body can handle it. Otherwise, you can get something called prolapse. And that's when they push so hard to get the egg out, and their body really isn't mature enough for it or large enough for it, that out with the egg comes part of the oviduct, and that's just a horrible mess. So when people say that light intensity and day length can help control cannibalism, you're really controlling sexual maturity to avoid cannibalism, because that oviduct, when it comes out, sure is shiny and really quite red, and other chickens will pick at that. And that can spell the end for your birds. And, you know, a lot of people are just thoroughly grossed out when their birds' oviducts come out, or it means a trip to the vet. So, and, you know, not a lot of veterinarians are going to tell you, well, it needs to be on shorter day lengths. And, well, how are you going to fix that? You don't have a commercial house. You don't have light baffles. So, you know, think about, you know, the darkest place that you have, and, you know, you might have to move them to that location on your property or in your house so that you can at least give them less light so their bodies can mature a little bit more slowly.
Okay.
So it's an interesting topic. Lots of research on it. Research is continuing to be done on other species, like, say, game birds or ostrich, those bird
species.
Yeah,
that was a question
but,
in the chat room from Christmas Chick. She's getting quail for her birthday at the end of the month and was curious if light affects chickens, quail, and guineas kind of the same way, egg-laying
yes.
birds.
All birds. So what you're going to want to do, I'm actually going to talk about a research project that was done on Japanese quail, which is Coturnix japonica. What they did, it was two researchers, Follett and Sharp, and what they did is something called a night interruption experiment. What they did is they had a basic photoperiod of 16 hours of light, 8 hours of dark. That adds up to 24 hours, right, Andy?
That is correct. Last at that.
So, and then they had eighteen treatment groups. Sorry, apparently I can't read numbers today. What they did for the treatment groups is they put them on 6 hours of light, and then the rest was dark, except depending on what treatment group you as a quail ended up in, somewhere in that long dark period, you got a 15-minute pulse of light. It's called a pulse, but, you know, they weren't pulsing light at them. It was just a 15-minute period of light. It's called a pulse. So in that night interruption experiment done with Japanese quail, you know, if the pulse came between 12 and 16 hours after dawn, then they saw the gonads begin to grow in the quail. So that's how they figured out when the photosensitive period was, where it was in that 24-hour period after dawn. So, you know, they said, okay, well, we know that they respond to this 15-minute pulse of light. What if we shorten that dawn period? Instead of making it 6 hours long, that six-hour period that existed in the other experiment, they did a second experiment where they only gave them a 15-minute pulse of light to indicate dawn. And then they did a pulse of light in the photosensitive period, and, you know, they said, well, the birds don't really need all that much light for them to still produce. Of course, we don't keep birds in the dark most of the time because they do actually need to find food and water and therefore grow. So, but it was a neat experiment that maybe will get some of your listeners thinking about their school science fair projects as the school season begins again. And what they could do, a very simple project might be, oh, shorter days for half your hens, normal days for the rest of your hens.
Mm-hmm.
And see who goes out of lay. What percentage of your birds were going to go out of lay if they're kept mostly in the dark? There's a simple experiment.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, people will talk about and say, when they talk about light, they're like, oh, yeah, they need 16 hours of light to lay an egg. If they get 8 hours today and 8 hours tomorrow, they have enough light to lay the egg, and they know that they'll probably slow down in the wintertime because the days get shorter. And, oh, if I add a light, then they'll keep laying and things like that. And some people know that really the first winter, like you were talking about, they may lay really good, and the next winter it starts to slow them down a little bit. But they don't, you know, get this technical. So I think it's good information for us to know technically why this happens and that how even a blind bird's going to lay, because the light that it goes through the brain to that gland. And
Christmas Chick is getting those quail eggs, correct?
Correct. She's setting the, or actually Alexandra Douglas. She was on yesterday talking about quail, setting the eggs for her, apparently, and so she'll get them the first week of September.
And the interesting thing is, for chickens, it takes them anywhere from, 18 to 20 weeks or maybe even 22 weeks to start laying eggs. If it's Japanese quail, they're going to start laying eggs in 6 weeks, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep. They are fast reproducers. So there you go. Enjoy your new quail. I don't know what type you're getting, but like I said, she's getting Katornix. Wonderful. Wonderful. You're going to enjoy those. They lay wonderful eggs. Beautifully spotted eggs, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, she was talking about also yesterday the feed conversion of, quail being, I think it was, 2 pounds per, I forget, a dozen eggs. She had the whole formula yesterday in the show versus chickens. Would quail be a better thing to have on your homestead or in addition to chickens if you wanted to live more sustainably because of the amount of feed for the eggs and how fast they come or grow to how fast they start laying, like you said, 6 weeks, and then how fast they get to eat in size versus a chicken, and just kind of comparing and giving us the information about those Katornix. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, meat Katornix is a very different strain from egg-laying Katornix, Japanese quail. At school, I went to UC Davis. We had a line of Katornix quail that was very good for egg-laying. Beautiful eggs. And when you walked along the aisle and picked up the eggs, very consistent with their patterns. In fact, some people could look at the flat of eggs after you leave the building and they're like, that's number 782, and just point right to their egg. And you go back and you're like, you're right. Yeah, some of them have signature egg patterns. I think you're going to enjoy them.
That is crazy.
What I used to do is I would blow them out and just, dry them out and put them in a bowl. And they were just so interesting to look at, a decorative bowl of dried out eggs.
I got a friend that raises those, and he'll post occasional pictures of a whole bunch of those quail eggs. And they at least from the color of the camera that he uses on Facebook, however it looks on the computer, just these black and white splotches all over these eggs. And you may have 200 or 300 of them. And it'll remind me also. So I always pull his leg and joke and say, hey, it looks like your Jersey milk cows are laying again.
Nice.
It just looks like an egg a Jersey cow would lay,
But can you imagine how many of those you'd have to break out to have a family-sized omelet?
I know it, yep.
Huge numbers. I'd rather just go get a couple of goose eggs and be done with it.
Goose eggs? Oh, my goodness. Now we're talking about a huge omelet.
Man.
That's awesome. Yep, very, very good. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. Great information, as always. And, a lot of people just know the basics about light and how it may or may not affect laying, but now we kind of know the science behind it and how it's important. And, the amount of light is not. I remember you telling us a story, probably 2 years ago, about someone bragging about their chickens laying through the winter, and they added no light, and you went to visit, and lo and behold, there's a street lamp just right outside the coop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I love that story.
So,
that's awesome. Yeah, to cheer that.
It doesn't take much, but it's going to be there.
That's very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Great episode, great topic, and we look forward to having you back here in another couple of weeks. As always, it's great to have you on, Dr. McRae, and we wish you the best, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks right back here.
Thank you, Andy.
Great, thank you. You take care. All righty, that was poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, great friend of mine, and very knowledgeable. Always love to have her on. Great personality, great laugh. And every other year she has Cooptastic up there at her college. So I attended 1 year. The next year I think Caleb was being born. So it's just one of those things. But I'll try to definitely get back for the next one now that we've got the RV. So gotta love it. Well, hey, that's going to wrap up another episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I'm so glad you tuned in today. And as we leave, I think I have an appropriate song based on today's topic. So I hope you enjoy it as we call it another day. And we hope you'll tune in Monday with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, when we come back on Monday. Have a wonderful and blessed weekend. Here's something all about light.
Praise the Lord, I saw the light.